recently with them getting into trouble with the mortgage-backed securities and lying about this guy, John Paulson, who actually said...
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for The Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We'll be talking with David Bodwin, co-founder of American Sustainability, Sustainable Business Council. We're going to be talking about the Bush handouts and how the tax code affects small businesses. We've been talking about this for the last several weeks. How exactly do we help small businesses? Not the traders on Wall Street, not the big legal firms, not these hedge fund managers, not Halliburton, but small local businesses. When you think of a small business, I think of the guy down on Main Street who's trying to make a go of it, trying to help support his family, provide a service or a good to the community. Those are the kind of businesses that I want to support. And I think we all do. So we're going to talk a little bit about that with David. Also, John Mahoney, partner with Tully Rickner, from Albany, New York. He's going to be here talking about the TSA thing. He's head of the Labor and Employment Law Practice. His specialty is federal sector employment and also national security law. So it'll be interesting to get his take on this whole TSA thing because, as I've said from the beginning, the answer to all of this is just fly naked. That's the simple answer because at the end of this, I can either keep you safe or I can keep your civil liberties. You can't have absolute both. And it's a sliding scale. How much are you willing to give up for this illusion of safety? You know, I've talked to a lot of people, and we're going to go through this a little bit more later, but I've talked to a lot of folks recently who've said, oh, I just want to be safe. Just keep me safe. Well, if that's the case, then the best way of doing that is no more civil liberties, at least when you fly in a plane. And also, John Smith, he's one of the locked-out members of Steelworkers Local 7669, the Honeywell strike out there, or not strike, he's locked out. That's a huge, huge difference. Uranium enrichment facility out there in Metropolis, Illinois. We're going to find out more details about that. It's been 5 months since these guys have been kicked to the curb. And, you know, this is another example, a glaring example of our broken labor law, which is why we need labor law reform in this country badly. Now, the kind of reform that we're going to be getting over the next couple of years, the only kind of reform we'll be getting is those guys are just kicked out into the curb, and they get whatever the corporate master decides that that he should get. Because that's where the right wants to take us. The right wants to take us down the path of saying, well, you know what, this is what the man's willing to offer. You take it or you leave it. No collective bargaining, no right to a job, no none of that stuff. No voice on the job. You are just a tool to be used and discarded at will. And, you know, that's the rights view. Does this make any sense to you? And help me here because I'm just not getting it. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I'm just not getting it here. We cannot, under any circumstances, according to the Republicans, extend unemployment benefits. Just can't do it. It's just not in the cards. Sorry, not in the budget. Sorry, 2.5 million folks on November 30th. There's the door. We just can't afford that $12.5 billion. But we have to extend the Bush handouts to the top 2% or the economy's going to collapse. Is this making sense to you? And do you know what the cost of extending those Bush handouts are? You know what the costs are? $830 billion over 10 years. So I guess my question is where are your priorities? Where are your priorities when you're saying, I'm sorry, you 2.5 million folks who are unemployed and have been chronically unemployed for quite some time, you and your families don't matter. We need to give this $830 billion windfall to the top 2% in the hopes that maybe they'll create a job or two. Maybe they'll need their trash taken out, or maybe, you know, they'll need their grass cut, or, you know, hey, maybe they'll need someone to cook their dinner or something. And you look at this and you just say, where are our priorities? Where are our priorities? Our first story, U.S. corporate profits are at an all-time high. Now, think about this for a second. Unemployment's almost, it's over 9%. We've got these 2.5 million folks who are about to lose their unemployment benefits. They're going to get kicked off the rolls. We're going to give $830 billion, probably close to a trillion by the time they throw in the estate tax. Because, of course, we can't expect people who these multi-billionaires who die to pay taxes, as they've been doing since 1916. No, can't have that. So we're going to give away $1 trillion that we're going to have to borrow from China, or we're going to have to borrow from somebody. I don't know who yet, but we're going to have to borrow this money so that we can bestow it upon the top 2%. But we can't help out these folks who need help. And look, this report, U.S. corporate profits all-time high, according to a report by the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis. At the same time, America's poor and middle classes are under siege with a mostly stagnant job market that has shown only marginal signs of improvement. Their profits have gone through the roof. In spite of the meager growth in some sectors, the real unemployment rate remains high, approximately 1 in 5 Americans out of work or underemployed. Yet for several fiscal quarters now, since the president took office, since he inherited this absolute disaster of a mess, this Bush recession, we've seen stronger and stronger and stronger corporate profits. As they've turned around, they've hoarded the resources. They've hoarded this money. And they said, well, you know what? We're just not going to hire anybody so that they can have their political will. According to the New York Times, the third quarter of 2010 saw the largest corporate profit in recorded history, $1.66 trillion. So, I got to go back to the question, you know, where are these jobs? All the money's there. The profits are there. You know, if these benevolent corporations, you know, if profits are it, they're there. They're absolutely there. So why aren't we seeing the job growth? Well, we're not seeing the job growth because nobody at the bottom has the money. And these unemployed folks, you know, they're not buying luxury goods. They're not out there living high off the hog. They're trying to just put mac and cheese on the table. They're trying to keep a roof over their kid's head. And what we're seeing is the dividing of America, this going back to the John Edwards theme of the two Americas. Only I'm using it as the very wealthy against the rest of us. You know, you make 100 grand, 200 grand, 300 grand a year. You're not that upper echelon. You're doing all right for yourself, but you're not that upper echelon. You know, like the one stat I saw, the people making between $250,000 and $500,000 only saw $700 in handouts from the Bush administration. If you made $1.4 million or more, you got $86,000. So it kind of shows where this where the shift is and who's important in all of this. You know, the official unemployment rate was just over 9%, they showed, with underemployment somewhere around 17.5%. I've seen some other ones somewhere around 22%, but, you know, that's another one. And you go back and you look at how things used to be. and the Bureau of Labor Statistics using their inflation calculator. Back in 1979, if you made 25 grand a year, that's like making 75,000 today. And what's happened is you're still making that same job that paid 25 grand a year back in the late 70s is paying like 27 grand now. You just haven't seen the wages go up. It's been completely stagnant. And some of the reports that I've seen have bore that out. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities found that, the income disparity in this country between those who have and those who don't is the widest it's been in 80 years. And it's not getting any better. For the top 1%, and think about this for a second, for those folks that we want to give $830 billion to, for those folks, they've seen their after-tax income since 79 go up 281%. 281%. For those folks at the bottom, people like you and me, you've only seen an increase in your wages by 16%. Think about that for a second. Only 16%. In fact, the minimum wage back in the 60s had much more buying power than it has today. Like almost $2 worth. And we don't have any problems. Writer Chris Farrell in Business Week wrote this week, the benefits of America's economic growth since then, 1979, have mostly gone to a wealthy minority. While the majority of workers have seen their earnings stagnate at best and decline at worst, the long-term trend is toward a small group of financiers, chief executives, professional athletes, entertainers, and other earnings titans pocketing much of the wealth generated by society. And really, that's what's going on. We've said here, we're going to give it all to the top. We're going to follow supply-side voodoo Reaganomics. We're going down that path. Here you go, folks at the top. Here's all the money. Take as much as you want. And hopefully when you're done gorging yourself, something will fall out of the side of your mouth, or something will fall off the table, a crumb. Maybe something will drop out of your pocket for the rest of us. And that's really how the economy has been working for the last 30 years. It wasn't always that way. It wasn't always that way. I go back to when my grandfather was in the working prime of his life, and you had 35% of the people in this country working in jobs that were represented by unions and had collective bargaining agreements, where their living conditions got better every year, and they saw things getting better. Their wages went up. Their benefits got better. Their health care, their pensions. The conditions on the job kept getting better. Now what we're seeing is we're going back on all that. We're seeing big business saying, now's the time. The economic recession's here. Now's the time to go back and take back those gains and put these working people back where they belong. And look, I'm not anti-business. I'm anti-multinational, monopolistic corporation, absolutely. But I'm not against small businesses. I want small to medium-sized businesses competing, thriving, and succeeding, because that's what made this country great. Not massive multinationals whose only concern is profit. And you go back to this, this quarter, the most profitable in history, almost $1.7 trillion, and yet they're not hiring. And what does that tell you? Well, that tells you that evidently profitable companies don't hire people. Companies hire people when they have a demand, not when their profits are up. When profits are up, they pocket the money. If we give them more tax cuts, what's that going to do? That's going to put more money in their pockets. That's not going to help the economy. And if you want to help the economy, you need to jumpstart the economy by, building stuff, by putting money in the pockets of people who absolutely need it at the bottom, like the folks who are unemployed. I mean, it's an absolute crime that the Republicans are holding the unemployed hostage, holding them hostage so that we can give the top 2% $1 trillion. And that's what they're doing to us. They're holding us hostage, man. We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're back with Dave Bodwin. We want the world.
Not right wing.
Rice. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. What's the best plan to put you or your friends and neighbors back to work? Conservatives are trying to convince us we need to cut the government budget deficit. But economist Dean Baker, speaking on WBAI's Building Bridges program, says that's the opposite of what workers need. We need more government spending to create the economic demand that will put America back to work. And here's why.
What we really need right now is more spending, and that may sound scary and strange to people and everything, but the story of the downturn is we lost a huge amount of demand from the private sector with the collapse of the housing bubble, and it's kind of straightforward. We had this huge bubble, an $8 trillion housing bubble that was supporting the economy, supporting huge amounts of construction every year, supporting consumption because people were spending based on the wealth they had, the equity they had in their home. That money's now gone. So we lost about $600 billion in annual construction demand, roughly the same amount, about $600 billion in consumption demand because people don't have that wealth anymore. So we're down $1.2 trillion in demand. The government is the only sector of the economy that can make that up. So the idea we should be worried about the deficit right now, it's just 180 degrees wrong. We want the deficit. If you want to save money now, you want to throw people out of work. People may not understand that who say that, but that's the reality.
Is it important for a federal agency to have authority over high-speed internet connectivity? Jesse Russell reports.
A new report from Free Press called Restoring FCC Authority to Make Broadband Policy a Way Forward After Comcast versus FCC suggests the FCC needs to relabel broadband as telecommunication so the FCC can have clear legal authority. Tim Wu, Columbia University Law School professor and author of The Master Switch, explained that the current way the FCC approaches broadband is chaotic. He said there is a historical precedent for reclassifying authority.
It's pretty clear to me that the argument that this is somehow going to dampen incentives or prove a problem for Internet innovation seems to me far-fetched, given the fact that this has always been the law.
The report finds that the current classification of broadband makes it difficult for the Commission to move forward with implementing the National Broadband Plan and impedes movement toward universal broadband access.
Turkey may be in the future for grocery shoppers in northwestern Washington. The UFCW and an alliance of grocery stores reached a tentative contract agreement that will likely avert strike action in the days leading up to Thanksgiving. The votes will take place after the holiday, and if approved, will see nearly 30,000 grocery workers not walking off the jobs. The employees were negotiating with chain stores Safeway, QFC, Fred Meyer, and Albertsons. This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association, the NEA, working for great public schools for every student. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Really, does any of this make sense to you? Because I'm not getting it. We can't, under any circumstances, extend unemployment because, well, you know, it costs too much. You know, that $12.5 billion, which you got to break the bank, can't do that. But somehow we've got enough money to hand out $830 billion to the top 2% over the next 10 years. That makes sense, right? I got that. Because to me, I think we could use that $830 billion in a much more efficient way, in a much better way to support small businesses and to create jobs and to invest in infrastructure. You know, maybe just a couple of ideas. I've got David Bodwin, co-founder of American Sustainable Business Council, on the phone. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rick. It's great to be on.
I appreciate your time. You know, I'm looking at the fact that we're still talking about handing out $830 billion to the top 2%, and somehow we're told that that's going to create jobs.
Well, Rick, that's really the wrong way to go about creating jobs, and the case is quite strong. What businesses really need to create jobs is strong demand from the economy, from the consumer sector, and we don't get that by handing out this kind of money at the top end and hoping that somehow it's going to trickle down.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the fact that, you know, one of the things I just saw today from the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis, we have had this last quarter was deemed profitable in the history of the country, almost $1.7 trillion in corporate profits, and yet we still got close to 10% unemployment.
Yeah, it's absolutely true that there's a tremendous disconnect right now between what's happening in terms of corporate America and stock market performance and what's happening on Main Street in the lives of American workers everywhere. Profits are up hugely. The market has done extremely well since the bottom. And yet, it has not trickled down. And honestly, given the way the economy is currently structured, it's unlikely to trickle down.
Well, it never did trickle down. That whole and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but that never created jobs.
Well, you know, there's a right amount of tax. Tax is kind of like Goldilocks' porridge.
Right.
If the government takes too much of the pie, it's bad. If it takes enough of the pie, it's bad. And you know, America's had periods of tremendous growth with very high taxes. And I look back under Kennedy, the marginal tax rates were lowered from 90% to 70%, and everybody thought that was terrific. We had a huge amount of growth back there. But where we are right now is government now has too little money to do the things that government needs to do, like ensure a good educational system and ensure that we have productive investment in roads and other kinds of infrastructure. And without the ability to do that, there's no way that the jobs and companies are going to be are going to find the U.S. to be the best place to base.
Yeah, and you know, I look at my home state of Ohio with the new governor they've got there, who has come out and said, you know what, the train that they were going to build from Madison, Wisconsin, through to Cleveland down to Cincinnati, that's in his mind dead. 40,000 jobs gone. They just don't want it.
It just blows me away. All over the country, people are saying, please take us back to the Stone Age.
And, you know, that's what I've been saying. You know, all of the things that we have today, all of the infrastructure and the universities and all that stuff are things that my grandparents' generation and my parents' generation sacrificed for. We're living off the investment of 20, 30, 50 years ago. And I worry about what am I going to leave my kids? Because we're not doing the kind of investing for their future that we need to be doing.
Yeah, that's right. And the evidence is really clear when you compare the states against each other. You know, the reason Silicon Valley is where it is Stanford. And if it weren't for the tremendous amount of money that goes to the university system through R&D grants and other means, you know, we wouldn't have Stanford and we wouldn't have MIT. And that means we wouldn't have Silicon Valley and we wouldn't have the incredible tech corridor outside of Boston. So, you know, to think we're protecting our economy by cutting away at these things is like chopping up the furniture and throwing it in the fireplace to keep warm and think we're doing okay.
Yeah, I'm just not getting it. And it seems to be the mainstream thought that we need to slash and burn. We don't invest in our infrastructure. We don't need to spend education. We don't need to make improvements. I look at where I live, and I'm not sure where you're at, but where we're at, the traffic here is unbearable at times. And I can't imagine what 10 years down the road is going to give us, because we have leaders not only in this state but across the country who have very little vision and no leadership ability. And they're going to leave us in this gridlock for the next 10 years when it's only going to be worse.
Yeah, and meanwhile, China is investing very heavily in a network of high-speed rail to pull the country together, and China's way bigger than the U.S. So for those people here who say that the U.S. can't do rail because the country's too big, China covers 5 time zones. We cover 3.
You know, I look at this. You want to talk about creating jobs. You want to talk about stimulating the economy. This unemployment bill, to me, is the smart thing to do, because we know that every dollar that we spend on unemployment to keep these folks from falling through to the pavement goes right back into the local economy and supports the kind of businesses that I think that I want supported, and I think you probably do as well. The people on Main Street, the folks who are, you know, they're not making huge profits, they're making a living, and they're providing a good or a service that's beneficial to the community.
Yeah, Rick, that's totally right. You know, if you look at the impact of different tax cuts at different parts of the economy, when you give a tax cut at the top end, what do people do with it? Well, you know, they're not going to go out and buy more food.
Bahamas, baby.
Right. Or they're going to bid up the price of houses on Long Island, or they're going to bid up the price of paintings that they buy at Sotheby's. And those are collectibles. There's no new labor going into them. So the effect of that on the regular economy is almost non-existent.
Yeah, and it's nonsensical. And I look at the fact that what we've got in this country is this beggar thy neighbor economic development that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Here in our area, we're losing the Carlisle Tire and Wheel, which has made their product in this community for 93 years. They're fleeing to Tennessee because the state of Tennessee is giving them millions of dollars in handouts. And it's this kind of thing that, I mean, we're beating each other up even before we get into the global economy. And I don't know how we're going to get out of that.
Yeah, that's the typical race to the bottom. And that's another area where government leadership's needed. You know, you look at how China negotiates with outside companies that want to come and invest, and they don't do what we do and have this race to the bottom. They play the companies off against each other and say, what kind of concessions are you going to make?
Here's what I don't understand, and maybe you've got an answer for it, because I can't figure it out. Why a U.S. company would go to China knowing that a Chinese firm is probably going to retro-engineer their product, sell it here cheaper, and pretty much put them out of business by violating their patents. I'm just not getting that.
Well, you know, a lot of companies go to China for two reasons. One is they can build whatever their widget is a lot cheaper there and then re-import them back here and sell them here. And then the other reason for a lot of them is there's a huge domestic market, depending on the product.
Yeah, I'm not against you building a product to sell domestically there in China, but I don't think we should have companies fleeing from here to make the products that ship back here and still call it an American-made company.
Yeah, well, that's a different story. And in order to counter that, we have to be vastly more productive, vastly more efficient than we are. And the only way we're going to get there is to educate our people better and to build better infrastructure.
But we're not getting to that point because we're not investing in education. You know, I'm looking at some of the things my Tea Party friends are saying, and it's scaring me to death. We need to do away with the Department of Education. Do away with all that. We don't need all that schooling. All they need is the Bible. That's what I get. I get that a lot.
Yeah, well, they're not hiring a lot of Bible readers these days. That's not a big sector of the economy.
And, you know, you make an interesting point because we've got to have that innovative, that next generation of products that are going to create the jobs that are going to employ people here. And my problem is though, we're not keeping those folks here.
Yeah. You know, people need to know math. They need to know science. They need to know business. They need to know engineering. These are the kinds of areas where their good paying jobs are going to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm out here in California. I know what's happening with your school system there. But with all of our budget problems, we've massively cut back on the amount of money available for community college and for the state college system. And what that means is people can't get through those programs in 4 years or even 5 years because the courses they need aren't offered. And in some cases, people can't get in at all because classes are simply full up. So now we're creating a generation of young people who have been unable to get the education they need to be competitive in the world economy, and that's going to create a vicious spiral downwards in terms of further deterioration of the job base and the income.
Yeah, none of this stuff looks good.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, you know, I've got a friend who's been unemployed for 2 years now, and he's like, I don't ever think I'm going to get another job. It's been 2 years, and he's had a handful of interviews, but nothing serious.
Yeah,
and as he said, my skills have now, they're deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the craftsman I once was. And you have this kind of when you have the stagnation of the skills, things are hard to turn around.
Yeah, it's really tough for people.
And you know, so what's the answer to that then? Personally, I think we need to go back to take this $830 billion, for instance, that we're talking about handing over to the top 2% that we're going to have to borrow first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
But I say take that $830 billion, use it as like the WPA, make the government employer a last resort, put people back to work, start trying to do some of those things, I think.
Yeah, I'm struck by a statistic about how the shift of income has happened over the past few years. In the 1960s, the top 1% of earners got 10% of the national income. But in 2002 through 2007, that same top 1% got around 65% of national income. So when it's that concentrated, the whole consumer demand engine begins to fall apart. And so you can no longer count on consumer demand to create growth and build an economy. So So in a situation like that, we really need to restore the balance. And frankly, you know, that balance used to be maintained by the power of labor, the power of unions. And as globalization has weakened unions, there's been no other force that's come in to ensure that the productivity of the economy gets fairly distributed to people.
You know, during the whole run-up to this last slaughtering the Democrats took in this emotional election, and the Tea Party out there screaming about, the deficit. I was saying that our biggest deficit that we should really be worrying about is not the budget deficit, but our trade deficit. If we didn't have that massive trade deficit, all of our budget problems would be virtually solved.
Well, yeah, clearly they're related. And the trade deficit has to do with borrowing to sustain a level of consumption that the economy can't afford.
Well, that, and we don't produce anything anymore. I mean, if you had a real trading system, because we're not trading anymore. We're just buying things made in China that used to be made here.
Well, of course, that's more complicated. That if the Chinese had not been managing their currency the way they have, things from China would over the past decade have become a lot more expensive, and we'd be buying a lot less for that reason. And that would tend to protect American manufacturers, and there'd be more things made here and in other places.
So I've often questioned why haven't we gone after that? I know the steelworkers this past summer went to the president and said, hey, we're going to file this trade case. And the president has taken those when the steelworkers have pushed it, but the government hasn't pushed it. States haven't pushed it. Corporations haven't pushed it. In fact, the tire case that the steelworkers pushed, the companies didn't want. They fought against the president pushing this tire case that the steelworkers put forth.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very hard to fight given the whole structure of international trade agreements that we have put in place over the last several decades. It's easy when it's one particular industry that's doing something. It's much harder when it's being done in this kind of broad gauge way with the currency.
Let me ask you.
Honestly, our foreign policy apparatus is not up to the task.
Oh, no, it's not. And I think Paul Craig Roberts had probably the best quote on that I've ever heard. He said, you know, we're the only country in the world that gives up our prosperity for nebulous foreign policy aims.
Yeah.
And it's true. I mean, we go around and give industry away to keep people happy.
Well, you know, we have a theory that we've been working on for years, which says that low barriers and completely open trade works to the benefit of all. But the theory clearly doesn't account for the reality of what a government like the Chinese government can do when it sets out to be very strategic and very forceful in promoting their domestic economy.
All right, so let's go back to what we're supposed to be talking about, which is the Bush handout and how they relate to small business. I got about 2 minutes here. Do these handouts help small business?
Well, you know, most of our members in American Sustainable Business Council are small businesses, and they're committed to principles of sustainability and socially responsible ways of operating. It's a group of 24 organizations, and it's been very fast growing and very influential over the past couple of years. You know, these people recognize that these handouts really don't make much of a difference in terms of their day-to-day operations because, you know, businesses aren't taxed on revenue. They're taxed on income. So to give somebody a subsidy of this kind doesn't have anything to do with whether they hire another worker or buy another piece of production machinery. If the demand's there, they're going to hire that worker. If the demand's there, they're going to buy that machinery. It's not the tax cut that leads them to grow. It's the presence of demand.
Absolutely. So what do we do with this $830 billion, in your opinion?
Well, you know, we need to get the taxes up to the level they were before. And we need to use that money for a combination of things. We've got to invest in the sort of real productive stuff we've been talking about, like education. We've got to spread the money around to reverse some of this imbalance so we have some strong consumer demand again. And we got to protect the safety net so that we extend unemployment benefits and provide meaningful retraining to people like your friend.
I absolutely agree. David Bodwin, co-founder of American Sustainable Business Council. Do you have a website?
www.asbcouncil.org.
All righty. We'll make sure we get a link at our site at therickSmithShow.com. David, I appreciate your time. Great conversation. Thank you.
Rick, thanks.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-7425. We're right back after this.
lovely blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
This is at least a six-hanky story, so pull that box of tissues up close to you. Ready? Wall Street executives are sad. And mad. They're mad at you and me for being so negative about the fact that they crashed our economy. Also, President Obama has openly chastised them, and several candidates said some really hurtful things about Wall Street banksters in the recent elections. So, they're sad. So sad that some of the biggest of the big banksters recently flew all the way to South Korea in search of shoulders to cry on. The group of 20, the top governmental leaders of the world's biggest economies, was meeting there. Like camp followers, financial CEOs trekked along for a sideshow called the G20 Business Summit. This allowed them to collar world leaders for what amounted to a group whine. I kind of feel like I'm living in parallel universes, Keene, the chief executive of Citigroup, referring to the criticism of Wall Street back home. I'm here in Korea, and I feel this warmth, he gushed. But then, when I get back to my real universe in the USA, it's cold in that universe, he cried. Likewise, Steven Schwarzman, a multi-billionaire, hedge fund huckster, cornered German Chancellor Angela Merkel to howl about his fear of excessive regulation of the schemes and scams that have made him ridiculously rich. But she offered a very cold shoulder for Steve's tears. There needs to be a mind shift away from making money to earning money, in the proper sense, Merkel told Steve. Still, the financial titans kept weeping, even pleading that their notoriously goosey derivative scheme should be spared from regulation. These products, wailed the head of Deutsche Bank, are creating wealth and prosperity in the world. This is Jim Hightower saying, really, sir? Wealth and prosperity for whom?
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
One 888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. That's the number if you got something on your mind, question, comment. If you're as upset about this unemployment thing as I am, also remember, check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. You can watch the live video feed there from our studio right here, right to your computer at home with our Ustream account. Feel free to check that out. Up to the phone lines, I got Mike on line one. How are we doing today, Mike?
Rick, I'm listening to your conversation here. It's making me a little crazy.
Okay.
All right.
What's got you crazy?
Well, first of all, the reason we're where we are is because we've got a bunch of people who don't give a crap about the country.
Yep, I agree.
All they give a crap about is profit. Anybody remember a guy named Boesky?
Yeah.
Ivan Boesky pulled about 4 years in the joint for some of the stuff he did.
Yep.
Well, Mr. Boesky was in the business of buying up companies. But he didn't buy these companies because they were interested in operating them.
Nope.
They were searching around for companies that were undervalued, where the plant assets that they held were much higher than the stock price.
And the pension funds and all the assets that went along with it.
So they'd go in and grab that company up, and then they would liquidate it. They would rip up the plant, they would lay everybody off, and they would ship this equipment to China and other places. Okay? They don't give a crap about this country. All right? Education is not our problem. You know, I've got a couple of degrees. How many do I need?
I agree with you. I know people who, back during the 80s, and I've got some friends who are probably your age, maybe a little older, who went through this back in the 80s when you had the Raiders go in and buy up these companies and sell them off for a quick buck, who got, you know, out of those jobs, they trained for another one. Those jobs went away, they trained for another one. During the Clinton years, everybody got into the IT, into the computers, and now all that's gone to India and Malaysia, and now we're retraining people again and again and again and again. Because we can't keep the jobs. We're not keeping. It's not that we can't. It's not. We're not keeping the jobs here.
That's because the people who are into the profit and the filthy lucre, the banksters and the Wall Streeters, don't give a damn about this country people in it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the thing I talked about right at the beginning.
So, right, I got to tell you.
Please do.
We're on the edge of the abyss. All right? They're not going to come and give us jobs. They'll let us starve in the streets.
And that's when I do agree. I do agree that people will then rise up.
Right. And we're
because you don't have a choice.
And we're close.
Do you really think that they're that short-sighted that they would do that, though? I mean, honestly.
Well, first of all, if the administration that we voted in, that we worked for, is totally impotent.
Yeah.
Okay? If they were, right now there would be thousands of trials going on for people who have engaged in fraud in foreclosures. Thousands of trials. Yeah. During the savings and loans, you know how many people they tried for the savings and loan fandango?
I think it was something around 1,000.
About 1,000. So far they've tried none.
Right.
Here.
Okay. They're now investigating, if that makes you feel any better.
No, it really doesn't. Okay? It really does. People should be doing perp walks wearing shackles.
I'm right there with you.
Hey, they locked up Martha Stewart for almost a year for lying to the FBI. That was her crime. They never convicted her of anything that they were trying to charge her with.
Right.
They just wanted somebody. Well, what's wrong with these people? I mean, this is straight up easy to prove. They got scads of documents where people have committed fraud to throw people out of their homes. And so where's the outcry? Where's the trials? I don't see it. We're close. We're very close.
I hope not, Mike. I appreciate the call. Thank you.
All right.
I appreciate your anger. And I do. Look, I understand the anger, and I'm right there. But as far as going, you know, now we're over the, I'm going to hold back a little bit because I do think that at the end we've been through this stuff in our history and we've been able to work our way through it without resorting to that. So I'm hoping that that's something. But he's got a point. I mean, you look at the fact that during the savings and loan thing, you had 1,000 people that were on trial. A lot of them went to jail. The Keating Five, if you remember, they, you know, granted, they didn't go to the kind of jail that you and I would go to. They went to their country club jails, but they were still locked up. So far, nothing. And what bothers me is we end up giving hundreds of billions of dollars away in the hopes that maybe, possibly, if they felt nice, they would loan it back to us, you know, with interest, of course. So we give it to them pretty much interest-free because the Fed has just handed them as much money as they could want. And they're supposed to lend it back to us, and they won't even do that. They won't even lend us our own money back, which tells you how corrupt they are. Almost $1.7 trillion in the third quarter in corporate profits, and we've still got close to a 10% unemployment rate. And, you know, Mike, I got to be honest. You know, there are times that I get that way. There are times where I go, you know, let's go to the rack, man. Let's go to the mattresses. Let's do what we got to do. Frustrating, Jake. Frustrating.
Absolutely.
$1.7 trillion, almost $1.7 trillion in pure profit. Profit that they put into their pocket.
Well, on top of that, we mentioned about the banks and corporate America. Just about a month ago, I heard Bill Clinton talk about that. He said and Bill's usually pretty accurate. He said between the two right now, they're sitting on about $3 trillion. They're waiting for the right time. In other words, they're making to make a bigger profit. Meanwhile, the economy gets worse and worse and worse. And every month, you have more and more people unemployed. There's greater suffering. And what are they waiting for? They're waiting for the right opportunity to maximize their profits.
And again, you know, I go back and I'm where's the outrage? Why aren't you angry that we haven't extended unemployment? That's something that you and I, people who work for a living, that's something that we depend on. That's part of the social safety net that keeps us from absolute poverty and collapse. Why aren't we in the streets screaming about this? I hear more people enraged that we're not going to give $1 trillion to the top 2%. I've got friends who are angry that we're not extending the Bush tax handouts. We should be doing that. Make them permanent. Because there's this bizarre belief that the employer is going to give us jobs out of the goodness of their heart, they're such wonderful people. They're going to give us jobs. Well, I've just shown you almost $1.7 trillion in profit. They've got the money. It's there. They're not hiring anybody. Why? Why should they? They're making big profit. They're making people do more for less. They're cutting people's wages. They're saying, hey, buddy, we're going to lay somebody off in your department, and the rest of you got to pick up the slack. You're going to have to work harder. You're going to have to work more. And I guess we, you know, I keep hearing this, well, at least I got a job. At least you got a job. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
A boy with a gun. I got a picture in my pocket of the lucky one. I'm an announcer winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm on till 1 a.m. I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show. Teaching America for the better.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Fascist, you may be surprised. People all over this world are getting organized to fight. You fascists are bound to lose.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any part of the show, they're all right there archived for you to download or listen to right at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Did you see this weekend on Meet the Depressed? They get this congressman-elect, this Alan West, who is really he is the poster child now of the conservative movement. He's a black guy who, you know, military career, very, very staunch conservative. In fact, he's like the Tea Party conservative. I don't know that he really has conservative values. He's got crazy, way out there, oh my God, I'm nuts kind of stuff going on. But he was on Meet the Depressed talking about why we should be permanently extending these handouts to the top 2%. And along the way, he was making some bizarre comments. Because he had talked about Florida's unemployment rate being about 13% and the fact that in Florida you've got foreclosures that are just through the roof. And he made this statement that I thought was really, really bizarre for someone who is now a congressman, one, and two, now lives in the city of Washington. He says that you don't see people get laid off and you don't see anyone suffering in the nation's capital. So he thinks that, you know, everything's wonderful there in Washington, D.C. Everything's just grand. There's no unemployment problem, no foreclosure problems, none of that. And I guess the people that have surrounded him, that's true. According to the D.C. Fiscal Policy Institute, only 4.2% of people with college degrees are unemployed in Washington, D.C. Now, you move into the 8th Ward there, you've got 28 to 30% unemployment, one of the highest in the nation. And I guess it just kind of shows how out of touch this guy is, or how he needs to he needs his rhetoric to fit. You know, he's got a world view, and it's like the kid with the, it's like the guy with the hammer, who that's the only tool he's got, so everything looks like a nail. Fix your TV, I got a hammer. I guess that's how it works here. And in talking about the foreclosure thing, there was a video that I had seen of the residents of Washington, D.C. lining up for blocks to get into the convention center to receive some kind of home loan counseling because so many people in the D.C. area are losing their homes. It's not just a Florida thing. It's a national thing. And I guess it's easy for someone like West, he's there in Washington. He's surrounded himself with the lobbyists who have, been more than generous with the luncheons and the cocktail parties and all of that stuff. I'm sure it's easy for him not to see what the rest of the country is going through and what the people right under his nose are going through. And I'm telling you, these kind of people, they scare me. They scare me. And what we're hearing this right wing, the right wing's really pushing the John Edwards frame, Jake. They're really pushing this two Americas frame. The only difference is it's not the two Americas that you and I think of, the billionaire class against the rest of us. No, no. What he's saying, well, there's two Americas. You know, there's the those public sector workers, those federal government workers. They make too much money. And I'm working on getting a guest to argue this back a little bit here in the future because I'm not buying this frame. I'm just not. There are two Americas, and I do believe that. It's those people who live in their gated communities and fly in private jets to their private islands. The folks that, good luck getting into those country clubs and good luck getting onto that golf course where they don't let you. And then the rest of us who, we fight amongst ourselves for the scraps that they leave us, if they leave anything. And you look at the fact that they're not extending this, I'm going to go on about this until they extend it because the fact that they've refused to extend unemployment benefits to the people who absolutely need it.
Well, I do believe this, and I do believe this is the issue where the Democrats can stop the hemorrhage. What I mean, I think this is the issue. If they handle it right, if they frame the discussion right, if they have the backbone to stand up to the American people, even if they have to delay the bill, even if they have to delay the bill but not be willing to compromise, I would rather have them do that and then go back later in the next Congress and try it again. But they got to stop this laying back and letting the Republicans just jab them, punch. I think they've learned the lesson. When they attack you, you're out there the next day.
They're not out here.
Well, what I'm saying is here's a golden opportunity. What better way to frame it to say, look, this is what we stand for. We want to extend unemployment benefits, which would actually be an economic impetus at $12 billion compared to they want to spend your tax dollars in excess of $800 billion to give to people that don't deserve it, shouldn't have it, and are not going to spend it in a way that's going to stimulate the economy. What better way to frame that comparison? This is an issue where I think the Democrats can really get the public on their side if they handle it properly.
At the end of the day, it comes down to which side of this issue are you on? Which side are you on? Are you on the side of the investor class or are you on the side of the working class? And I know we like to say, oh, we're a classless society, and I've heard it so often that it makes me want to throw up because it's not true. We are a very class-oriented society. But you look at issues like this. I mean, the fact that it's just.
But think what they're saying, right? They're going back the old warmed over failed trickle down theory. That's what they're trying to feed the public.
But the reality is they don't think it failed. It did what it was supposed to do. Trickle down economics did everything that it was supposed to do. It didn't do what they told you it was going to do. It didn't do what they told me it was going to do.
It enriched them.
It did what it was supposed to do.
Yes, you're correct on that.
And that was to take wealth out of your pocket, take wealth out of your family's bank account, and put it into theirs. And I look at Warren Buffett, chief executive officer of Berkshire Hathaway, and you know, probably one of the richest man in the world. And he's saying, look, tax me. If anything, taxes for the lower and middle class and maybe even the upper middle class should be probably cut further, according to Buffett. You know, he says, but I think that people at the high end, people like myself, should pay a lot more in taxes. We have it better than we've ever had it, he said. Now, look, here's the reality. And I think this is where the wealthy people in this country have to wake up and kind of go, hey, we better think this through. If you have the kind of disparity that we have, and you have people who are going hungry, you have folks who are going to do what Mike wants to do. He thinks we're at the abyss. He thinks that we're over the edge. You're going to see mass rioting. Who is going to protect their wealth? And at some point, they have to wake up. And I think Buffett's there. He's going, you know, I would, if I were him, I'd be worried. I'd be worried.
But okay. Buffett grew up at a time, remember, Rick? 1963, the highest tax rate was 93. Now it's down to 35% for these millionaires. He grew up in a time when that was considered the norm, and he saw and lived it. He understood why. You know, he's not the only one. There's some others that are very, very wealthy. But they've been around. They've lived it. They understand the concept of giving back. Giving back to your community. Giving back to the people of this country. Giving back to the society that allowed you to succeed. And that's what bothers me about some of these millionaires, especially first and second generation. They give you the attitude that, well, it was only because of my great ability. Oh, nonsense. Come on. Most people make it because of well, let's be honest. Some of them were lucky. Some of them have good help. Yes, some of them had good ideas, but it wasn't just because of their ingenuity.
Well, you had the infrastructure to do it.
Infrastructure.
I mean, you could have a great idea living in Ethiopia. If you're living in Ethiopia, your great idea isn't going to get you very far.
You had good help, and maybe you had, you know, the luck of the draw. Maybe you just happened to be at the right place at the right time. And good for you. You're making money, and that's okay.
Yep.
But don't then take that attitude that you shouldn't have to pay, give back to society at the expense of the truly needy.
When we come back here in a minute, we're going to talk about the TSA thing. I don't know if you've been following this in the news, but it's, you know, it's just getting bizarre. It's getting even more bizarre by the day. And as I've said from the beginning, this is a labor issue. This is about the airlines, and this is about the wealth class saying, you know what, we want to privatize those jobs. There's profit to be made there. Remember, the airlines were ticked after 9/11 when they took those jobs away, and they said, we're going to put it under federal control. They were ticked about it because it was a profit generator, and it was a customer service thing. You know, the airlines are kind of, you know, they're ticked off because, you know, the harder you make things and the more stringent they are, the more people aren't going to want to fly. And that's bad for the airlines. That's bad for business. So watch what's coming in the coming days. And when we come back, we're going to talk about this with a lawyer who deals with this kind of stuff. Because I think it's really the conversation we need to be having. You know, it goes back to the old saying, you know, I can keep you safe or I can give you your liberties. I can't give you both. But we'll be back with John Mahoney, partner with Tully Rickney. Right back after this.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. What's the best plan to put you or your friends and neighbors back to work? Conservatives are trying to convince us we need to cut the government budget deficit. But economist Dean Baker, speaking on WBAI's Building Bridges program, says that's the opposite of what workers need. We need more government spending to create the economic demand that will put America back to work. And here's why.
what we really need right now is more spending, and that may sound scary and strange to people and everything, but the story of the downturn is we lost a huge amount of demand from the private sector with the collapse of the housing bubble, and it's kind of straightforward. We had this huge bubble, an $8 trillion housing bubble that was supporting the economy, was supporting huge amounts of construction every year, supporting consumption because people were spending based on the wealth they had, the equity they had in their home. That money's now gone. So we lost about $600 billion in the annual construction demand, roughly the same amount, about $600 billion in consumption demand because people don't have that wealth anymore. So we're down $1.2 trillion in demand. The government is the only sector of the economy that can make that up. So the idea we should be worried about the deficit right now, it's just 180 degrees wrong. We want the deficit. If you want to save money now, you want to throw people out of work. People may not understand that who say that. That's the reality.
Is it important for a federal agency to have authority over high-speed internet connectivity? Jesse Russell reports.
A new report from Free Press called Restoring FCC Authority to Make Broadband Policy a Way Forward After Comcast versus FCC suggests the FCC needs to relabel broadband as telecommunication so the FCC can have clear legal authority. Tim Wu, Columbia University Law School professor and author of The Master Switch, explained that the current way the FCC approaches broadband is chaotic. He said there is a historical precedent for reclassifying authority.
It's pretty clear to me that the argument that this is somehow going to dampen incentives or prove a problem for Internet innovation seems to me far-fetched given the fact that this has always been the law.
The report finds that the current classification of broadband makes it difficult for the Commission to move forward with implementing the National Broadband Plan and impedes movement toward universal broadband access.
Turkey may be in the future for grocery shoppers in northwestern Washington. The UFCW and an alliance of grocery stores reached a tentative contract agreement that will likely avert strike action in the days leading up to Thanksgiving. The votes will take place after the holiday, and if approved, will see nearly 30,000 grocery workers not walking off the jobs. The employees were negotiating with chain stores Safeway, QC, Fred Meyer, and Albertsons. This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association, the NEA, working for great public schools for every student. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Where common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Show.
Quote of the day comes from Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano. She wrote today to the TSOs, the Transportation Safety Officers. Time and again, the men and women of TSA have demonstrated poise and professionalism. Travelers and the public realize that your job is difficult and demanding. This holiday season, I am confident that you will again demonstrate your commitment to ensuring the safety of the traveling public to everyone who passes through an airport security checkpoint. And what's interesting to me is the American people have been really all over the map on this issue as far as I'm concerned. The naked scanning or the frisking, however, all over the map. Most people that I've talked to, they'll just keep me safe. I just want to be safe. And I can do that. I can keep you safe. You won't have any civil liberties left, but you'll be safe. Or go with my idea, fly naked. I've got John Mahoney on the phone. He's a partner at Tully Rinckney in Albany, New York. He's head of the labor and employment law practice, where he specializes in the practice of federal sector employment, labor, and national security law. So he's the perfect guy to talk to about this. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rick. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. I appreciate your being here. You know, I'm looking at this issue, and I've said from the beginning this is not about the procedure. It's about privatizing the TSOs. It's about going back to the way things were pre-9/11, in my opinion. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, there's certainly a risk of that, obviously, in the deficit economy that we're facing. Everybody's going after the federal employees and blaming it on them. So there is that risk, for sure.
Well, we've seen a number of airports saying that, you know, the first thing they're going to do next year is they're privatizing. A couple in Florida, New York, a bunch of them.
Yeah, it's really out of control, and there really needs to be something done by the Obama administration to protect these employees.
So let me ask you this. Let's get into this. You know, I've had friends of mine who, you know, they're on all sides of this. They touch me, I'm going to sue them. The other ones, I don't care. You know, basically, I agree with you, Rick, fly naked. We're all over the map on this. I'm curious where your thoughts are on what the constitutional limits in this are.
Well, sure. The Constitution, the Fourth Amendment, certainly prevents the United States government from engaging in unlawful or unreasonable searches of its citizens. There is the potential chance that citizens who are searched tomorrow on the way to Grandma's for Thanksgiving may believe that their constitutional rights have been impinged and therefore potentially file a lawsuit against the TSA screeners that are doing the screening, blaming it on, once again, the federal employees. So there is a risk of that, for sure.
Well, let me ask you this. What if these were private contractors? Would you still have that same protection?
Well, if the private contractor is employed by a federal agency, you know, the Fourth Amendment still applies. If it's a private company that's not employed by the government, then you can't sue them for constitutional torts. But you could sue them for assault and battery or any other, you know, standard civil tort.
Pretty much what Ron's talking about, taking away with his bill, the Help Americans Travel, some kind of something where you're going to open up these federal employees to lawsuits.
Potentially.
Well, that's his theory. We're gonna make it so onerous on the employee that, and again, I don't think this should be at the employee's level. This is a policy level problem.
It sure is. And the government needs to realize that it needs to engage in what's called reasonable searches. You can't engage in these unreasonable strip searches of everyone who wants to get on an airplane to go home for Thanksgiving. So I do think the administration will probably strike a balance between today and tomorrow to make these searches a little bit more reasonable and less safe. But we'll have to wait and see.
Well, I mean, what would be reasonable? Because I've had conversations with folks who they don't mind being frisked and groped, and just so they have this feeling of, well, you know, they're keeping us safe.
Well, certainly I don't see what the problem was with the prior screening that was done that didn't basically show nude photographs if everybody wants to get on an airplane, or force them to be sexually assaulted in the alternative. So I don't understand why we had to go to this really invasive, photograph system that we're starting tomorrow.
Well, I'll tell you why I think, if it matters. I think Michael Chertoff is the guy. He's the former Department of Homeland Security head of the Chertoff Group. He's one of the lobbyist people who have been pushing for this for the longest time. According to the Washington Post and the Examiner.
Sure. Well, certainly the contractor companies that developed this system are making some money off the deal for sure.
So let's say you're going tomorrow, you're going through the lines. What should someone do if they're confronted with a situation where they don't want to be frisked and they don't want to go through the porno scanner? What should they do?
Well, you know, as an attorney who handles employment law matters, I always tell my clients to obey now, grieve later.
Right.
Certainly you put yourself at risk of being arrested or at a minimum not being allowed to get on the airplane if you protest too severely. So if there is a problem that occurs with the screening that you believe your rights have been violated, certainly after the fact you have the right to file a civil action or even a constitutional claim against the government.
One of the things that I haven't been able to get information on is how they choose people. Is it something that everyone has to go through? Because the first bit of information I got is they chose a couple of people randomly to go through these naked screeners, and the rest were able to go through just the regular metal detectors. Any idea how this all works together?
Well, they're not calling it profiling, but they are calling it what's called trend analysis. And I'm not so sure that that's such a bad idea. I mean, obviously, sending grandma through the, porno screener, as you call it, may not be exactly a reasonable search under the circumstances. You know, but from what I understand, they're trying to put most everybody through either the porno scanner or the, you know, the frisk.
Yeah, for me, it comes down to a couple of things, though. I mean, you know, look, at the end of this, I don't believe we'll ever see another 9/11. I don't think you'll ever see somebody hijack a plane and have a passive group of people in that plane.
Yeah, let's hope not.
Well, I don't think you'll have those passive people. I think they'll realize that they're going to use this as a missile, and the people on the plane will then attack whoever it is for whatever reason. So, you know, there's part of me that says what we were doing before these scanners was fine. The intelligence that they were doing to profile people, and I'll use the word because it makes sense, was working. We haven't had an attack. It just seemed to be common sense to me.
I would agree with you. I've flown recently for a number of different cases around the country, and I didn't see why they would need to upgrade the level of security screening. And I don't see what the risk is of the heightened security risk. Obviously, we may not be privy to that, but I don't really see any evidence that would justify this enhanced screening system.
You know, and I guess that what bothers me about this is, you know, we're seeing all of this, these news stories coming out. Oh, the one guy in Denver was evidently doing what Christine O'Donnell says you're not allowed to do to a couple of the photos. And, you know, they're pushing this stuff out there. And for me, it comes back to what they're trying to do is they're trying to tear down the federal employees so that they can privatize this and make it a service again, another service for the airlines.
Yep. Well, you know, that's certainly the way the Republicans want to treat it these days. Let's blame everything on the federal employees. If there's a deficit, it's their fault. Let's cut their pay. Let's reduce their numbers, et cetera. Let's not give them union rights. And the TSOs have been fighting to be represented by unions for years since they come into inception back in 2002.
And what I find interesting is on November 12th, the National Labor Body, the Mediation Board, I think, is the one that said that they have the right to go ahead and to organize. And we've been seeing the Treasury Union and the AFGE actually trying to go and organize these folks. So it's kind of curious to me that the decision comes down on wealth, and now you've got this massive outburst of protest. Does that seem curious to you?
It is very curious to me. Certainly, you know, it does kind of smell a little bit, doesn't it?
It does, but you know, you look at this policy, and this is exactly what the anti-government people dream about. You know, the government is actually feeling you up, and you know, they've got their thumb on you. This is, to me, this is, if I were an anti-government person, if I were one of these way out right wingers, this would be a, you know, the gift that never keeps giving.
That's right. And if we privatize these federal employee jobs, then maybe they won't violate our civil rights anymore.
But they still have to abide, and this is the part that nobody has been saying, they still have to abide by the TSA. They still have to abide by what the Homeland Security people are saying are the minimum rules. So if it's a private contractor or if it's a federal employee, it's the same rules.
Exactly right. That's the trick to it all.
So I guess my question that I have for you as a lawyer is, what are the differences between a federal employee, which I think you have some constitutional claims against, or a private for-profit entity who you really have no constitutional claims with?
Well, you can certainly sue the private for-profit entity for civil tort if you believe one of their employees is assaulting or battering you while you're trying to get out on an airplane. So there are certainly a cause of action against the private contractors, and certainly to the extent that they've been federalized as a result of working for Homeland Security, the argument would be that they're subject to constitutional claims as well.
Is there any rationale in saying, well, look, if you don't submit to this, we just don't let you on the plane. It's your choice to go through this, to either do the porno screener or the groping. If not, you just don't have to fly.
Yeah, well, that's what the government's trying to say, that it wouldn't be a forced search and therefore it wouldn't be subjected to a constitutional claim. But in reality, come on, a lot of these people purchased these tickets before these tests were changed. So is it really a voluntary search?
Well, that,
and
sure. from what I understand, once you get into line, at least the way I saw it on this video that the right-wing guy produced, you know, I'm waiting to see if they charge him, but they told him they were going to. Once he got into line, you can't turn around and go back and say, oh, I changed my mind.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is, the argument is that it's a knowing, voluntary, intelligent waiver of a statutory or constitutional right when you stand online. But certainly the phrase in the Constitution is unreasonable search. And arguably one could try to bring a claim saying that, you know, searching me this way or putting me through a porno screener is an unreasonable search under the circumstances because there is no evidence that we needed to jack up these tests to such a level of invasiveness. There's no, you know, added threat that's occurred in the last 6 months that would justify this, I would argue.
Yeah. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with John Mahoney. He's a partner with Tully Rinkney. He is head of their labor and employment law practice there, where he specializes in federal sector employment, labor, and national security. Let me take the other side of this. The folks who say, you know, well, you know, they just want to be safe. So, you know, willing to submit to this, or, you know, that guy in front of me, he should have to, just so I know that he's not a terrorist and I have the security, you know, this peace of mind that I need to have, that he's not a terrorist.
Well, that's their opinion for sure, but the reality is that I don't see the justifiable need to enhance the invasiveness of airport screenings in the last 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, whatever. The old system seemed to work just fine. It certainly prevented any, you know, repeat of 9/11 since 2001. So I'm not quite sure why we all of a sudden, other than to support and give money to federal contractor companies to develop, you know, more invasive screening machines, why we actually had to do this.
All right, I got about 2 minutes left. Do you mind taking a quick call?
Sure.
I got Mike on line one. How are we doing today, Mike?
Hi, Rick.
Got a question?
I've been following this issue on the Internet, and one of the things circulating on the Internet right now is that TSA has exempted people who are wearing religious clothing from certain aspects of the poking rope search.
That's an interesting question. What about that?
Well, you know, if we're going with this whole profiling idea, I'm not so sure that's the smartest way to go in terms of being effective at preventing terrorism. Certainly, you know, the radicalism of certain religions may be the basis for the screening process in the first place. So exempting people based on their attire is not really a fair application of the law.
No, we exempt John Boehner. Evidently, John Boehner can walk right through. According to The Hill, last Friday, he walked right past the screeners and didn't have to go through any of it.
Yeah, I'd like to see Mr. Boehner screened, actually.
invasively.
Well, that's your word.
I guess that is my word. John Mahoney, I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks so much. John Mahoney, partner with Tully Rinkney in Albany, New York, head of the labor and employment law practice there. We're going to take a quick break, right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, right back after this.
We can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
This is at least a six hanky story, so pull that box of tissues up close to you. Ready? Wall Street executives are sad. And mad. They're mad at you and me for being so negative about the fact that they crashed our economy. Also, President Obama has openly chastised them, and several candidates said some really hurtful things about Wall Street banksters in the recent elections. So, they're sad. So sad that some of the biggest of the big banksters recently flew all the way to South Korea in search of shoulders to cry on. The group of 20, the top governmental leaders of the world's biggest economies, was meeting there. Like camp followers, financial CEOs trekked along for a sideshow called the G20 Business Summit. This allowed them to collar world leaders for what amounted to a group whine. I kind of feel like I'm living in parallel universes, Keene, the chief executive of Citigroup, referring to the criticism of Wall Street back home. I'm here in Korea, and I feel this warmth, he gushed. But then, when I get back to my real universe in the USA, it's cold in that universe, he cried. Likewise, Steven Schwarzman, a multi-billionaire hedge fund huckster, cornered German Chancellor Angela Merkel to howl about his fear of excessive regulation of the schemes and scams that have made him ridiculously rich. But she offered a very cold shoulder for Steve's tears. There needs to be mind shift away from making money to earning money, in the proper sense, Merkel told Steve. Still, the financial titans kept weeping, even pleading that their notoriously goosey derivative schemes should be spared from regulation. These products, wailed the head of Deutsche Bank, are creating wealth and prosperity in the world. This is Jim Hightower saying, really, sir? Wealth and prosperity for whom?
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book title, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Don't you know,
talking about a revolution sounds. Don't you know?
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
One 888 520 Rick. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, check out our website, hungryandhomeless.org. We're in the process of putting together our Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays food drive to help Project Share and Carlisle Cares, the local emergency homeless shelter. We're going to be living in the giant parking lot there at 255 South Spring Garden Street from December 18th until December 24th at noon, where we will then pack up our gear and take the food where we need to go and celebrate Christmas with our families. This is going to be an opportunity for you guys to come out, support a great cause. I'd love to see everybody come out with a can at least. I'd prefer a case. That helps fill up the truck a lot faster. We would love to fill this up so that they get a good start to 2011. And also, we're doing our skid row promotion. So if you own a small business and you want to help purchase a portion of a skid, there's information there at hungryandhomeless.org. I've been watching a lot of TV lately, Jake. Last night I sat and watched the Broncos get thumped again. seems to be a recurring theme.
There's that sound.
Yeah. And I was at the gym this afternoon, and there was Oprah on the idiot box. And of course, I at the gym, you've got to watch Oprah at the gym because that's just how it is.
It's the only TV going.
Yeah, it's the only one going. Well, I wasn't listening, but I was reading because, of course, you know the music's going crazy. But I was reading this. This guest she had on. She had this woman.
Thank you. listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.